Morning, everyone, and happy Halloween. I'll admit that today being Halloween is a bit more important to me than the Giants parade, but just full disclosure. And I'm missing my 4.5-year-old's preschool Halloween parade, so he told me, he's like, Mom, this better be worth it, what you're doing. And I promised him that it would be. So I'm Sana Shahimi. I'm with Prevention Institute. We are right across the bridge in Oakland. We're a public health nonprofit, and we focus exclusively on prevention, the kind of social, ecological prevention that Lucas was talking about earlier. So we've spent the past 15 years looking at ways that we can improve the environments where we all live, work, play, and learn so that we are healthy and injury-free in the first place. And I want to acknowledge that there's a very important name that's missing from the title slide, but he's here, so I'm going to embarrass him just a little bit. Prevention Institute's wonderful graduate intern, Will, is sitting right there and really contributed to the development of this presentation. So if you like it, it's entirely because of his work. And if you don't, entirely failure of execution on my part. So, you know, then the responsibility is on me. And I don't have any relationships to disclose. So the title of the theme of this session is about translating the Affordable Care Act. You know, what is the role of public health? And so I want to answer that question and offer my perspective. And I think that the role of public health is to make the work contained in the Affordable Care Act relevant to all of us. We make a lot of assumptions in public health. You know, we get into public health for various reasons, but ultimately, and I'm going to make an assumption right now that, you know, those of you in this room, you know, share some of the same ideologies I do, that ultimately we care about the health of the public. We care about addressing inequities in health outcomes. We want people to live longer lives. We want them to live healthier lives. We want them to live safer lives. And so we understand that this is what public health does. But on the other hand, what we tend to get very insular in our thinking too, and we don't necessarily have the time or the resources to work on creating a constituency for public health, because we kind of feel like, well, the public's our constituency, right? Like, what we do impacts each and every one of us. It impacts every single person that is lined up right now to watch the Giants, you know, march down Market Street. Except that people aren't thinking about public health every day the way we do. And if we don't make public health relevant, you know, despite all the gains that we've gotten through the Affordable Care Act or the Prevention and Public Health Fund, we're under constant threat of having funding cut, funding pulled. So it's really important for us to take a step back and to really think about what is our role? How do we make it relevant? And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what the public's level of support for community prevention is, and it's actually quite high, and then share some messaging tips and strategies for how we take the work of prevention out of this highly politicized partisan environment and kind of reclaim it as work that impacts everyone. So this poll was conducted in May of 2009, so it was prior to the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And it basically shows that support for investments in prevention, and these were the kinds of investments that included both access to information, but it also included policies that make healthier decisions easier. Support for public health isn't bound by political ideology. So Democrats support it, Republicans, independents, there's high support. And it's also not bound by geography either. You know, so 79% in the Northeast, 72% is the lowest in the Midwest. So we still have nearly three quarters or more than three quarters saying that they support greater investments in prevention. This is from that same poll. You know, we only have 16% of those polled that said that they don't support greater investments in prevention. So this is really, you know, let's remember this prior to the Affordable Care Act. And then if we think about congressional prevention champions, you know, probably the first person that comes to mind is Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, who, you know, he's like the father of prevention congressionally. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, once he decides to retire. He's responsible for the Prevention and Public Health Fund. He's the one that's out there. There have been, as of July, 33 attempts to repeal, supplant, offset that original 10-year investment in prevention and public health. And each and every time, Senator Harkin is out there talking about the importance of continuing these investments. So when we think about the face, the congressional face of public health and prevention, we think about Tom Harkin. But if we take a little stroll through history, then we come across these six individuals. And they are each chairs of their respective groups, and they introduced the resolution expressing greater support for increased federal commitment to prevention and public health. This, now we're back to 2008, so right around the time there was, you know, a little bit more conversation about what health reform might look like, depending on what happened with the election. So, bipartisan support for prevention. We can flash forward a little bit. This is current Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, but at the time he was senator, and he points out that in terms of overweight and obesity, leaders from all industries must act responsibly and find plausible solutions that will turn around this unhealthy trend. We can and should do better. He's not just talking about individual responsibility. He's talking about, you know, industry accountability also. Another example of bipartisan support for prevention. Again, the thing to note in each of these cases is that this is all prior to the passage of the Affordable Care Act. So this here, the Partnership to Fight Chronic Disease is commending Senators Baucus and Grassley for prioritizing prevention and management of chronic disease in a white paper that they had put out. And then lastly, I think that this, you know, this is a really great quote. We believe healthcare reform must improve American lives through effective prevention, wellness, and disease management program. The president has said healthcare reform must address cost drivers in our system, such as obesity, sedentary lifestyles, and smoking. Republicans agree. So then what happens? So then flash forward to March 23rd, 2010. The Affordable Care Act is signed. It includes $15 billion over 10 years in the Prevention and Public Health Fund. Prevention Institute's executive and founder only half jokingly said that day that he felt like we could close, you know, like we had done, you know, when you talk about prevention and the B word, he never thought that he would necessarily see that during the course of his career. And then, as I mentioned before, since then, over 30 attempts to take this funding away. You know, so what happened? Like, how did we get to this highly politicized environment, particularly around prevention? Well, one of the reasons was the fact that the prevention dollars were actually the ones to go out first. So there are lots of different elements of the Affordable Care Act, and they're rolling out at different rates, but the prevention dollars went out the door first, so they became a really easy target and a really big focus for those that had decided that they didn't, in fact, agree with the intent of the Affordable Care Act. But what does public support for prevention look like after passage of the Affordable Care Act? it's still really, really strong. So this is another poll, and it shows, you know, that nearly three quarters expressed strong support for prevention initiatives. And that support is still strong when taxes are mentioned. So it goes down, but even when you talk about things like, you know, taxing junk food or sugar-sweetened beverages, you still have a majority that support these investments. And in fact, you know, nearly two-thirds of respondents said that they're actually more likely to support a locally elected official if that official supports community prevention. So we have a lot of public support, but what we really need to do is translate that public support and reach our elected officials. So I want to just point out what some of the common anti-prevention frames are that we see. So Obamacare, President Obama has reclaimed that. You know, he's talked about the fact that he likes the fact that it's called Obamacare. But mostly when you see that in news coverage, you know, it's not used as a compliment. There's a lot of conversation about the nanny state, and that prevention is about the nanny state. It's about restricting individual freedoms. The Prevention of Public Health Fund has been called a slush fund. It's wasteful spending. This is about government overreach. It's a slippery slope. You know, it's just one small step between taxing a sugar-sweetened beverage and big government reaching into your dining room and, you know, pulling that beverage out of your hands. And this is how some of these frames play out in the media. So this is what our elected officials and the public are seeing. And this is what we have to contend against and counter. So I'm going to share some of the messages and frames that Prevention Institute has found to be helpful in addressing the anti-prevention frames. And the way that we've approached this work is that we have a team of folks at Prevention Institute that do daily media monitoring. And it's both, you know, traditional print media as well as online and social media and blogs. And we really look at how issues related to the Affordable Care Act and community prevention and healthcare reform are being talked about or how they're not being talked about, and do an analysis of what the implications of that is, and then develop talking points that help reinforce positive messages or that can help dispel the more negative messages. So, I mean, one of our strongest starting points is that this work, fundamentally, it's about saving lives. It also saves money, and I'm going to share a similar slide to the one that Lucas did, but fundamentally, this is about saving lives. And that right now, 7 out of 10 deaths in the U.S. are due to preventable chronic conditions. And that is simply not acceptable in, you know, a country such as ours. And we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't stand for it. And it shouldn't be acceptable that efforts to address that are considered wasteful spending. So the message that community prevention is actually a really, really smart investment that is going to pay off by building health and preventing people from getting sick and injured in the first place is one of our strongest messages. So I won't spend a lot of time on this. This is the same Trust for America's Health model that Prevention Institute contributed to that actually does show that when you talk about prevention in the community, when you talk about improving community environments to address, you know, what to address chronic illness, there is a cost savings associated with that. We also need to remind folks that community prevention actually is evidence-based. There's a lot of coverage that makes it seem like the strategies in the community transformation grants were just made up by CDC and HHS like a few months ago, that they're not based on really solid evidence that when you improve community environments or when you improve school food environments, it actually does have an impact on behavior, and that that impact on behavior has an impact on health outcomes. So citing the evidence base and referring to the evidence base, and pointing out that we can't afford to not invest in what we know works becomes another really strong message that we have in our toolkit. Perhaps right now, the fact that prevention is good for business, you know, it might take precedence over any other message. But, you know, since the focus is on business, and in particular, the focus is on small business, right? Like, we've heard small business mentioned. I don't know how many times we've heard it mentioned over the, you know, the course of the current election cycle. Small businesses really benefit when their own workforce is healthier. I mean, in particular, small businesses, right? Because they can't afford to have someone that's out sick for an extended period of time, or that is at work but not fully present because they have a sick child at home that they're worried about. There's a lot of really good data and studies that show what the cost savings are to business from workplace wellness programs, et cetera, that can be cited. This is a quote that is used a lot from Communities Putting Prevention to Work, because it's the president of the Columbus Area Chamber of Commerce. He's become the public health darling. I bet you he was invited to speak at an APHA session. And, you know, he said, the bottom line is this: a healthy community is one in which companies want to locate, businesses want to grow and expand, and the best workforce in the world wants to live. And the discussion around business and prevention is shifting now from workplace wellness, so addressing the health of your own workforce, to the fact that businesses are now looking at the health of an overall community before they decide whether or not they're going to locate in that community. So now we're able to say, you know, great, that's what we're talking about. We're not just talking about workplace wellness programs, which are really important, but we can also say that if our community is deemed to be sicker than the one three counties over or a state over, a business making a decision about where they're going to locate is going to pass us over. And so there's a lot of research, anecdotal information around that that has been published as well. So here's a big one, and I'm going to speak very, very fast, but then there'll be opportunity for questions and hopefully answers. It's up to us to point out that government has always played a role in promoting public health, and that when government does that well, we take it for granted. We, you know, all benefit from the fact that there is no lead in paint or gasoline anymore. And, you know, government did that. We all contributed as advocates, but that was a government policy. We strap our children into car seats because we have to, and most of us wouldn't consider not doing it. Again, that's a government policy. So we are surrounded by government. You know, we take it for granted that our restaurants are inspected. We'd be up in arms if we knew that they weren't. Again, big bad government protecting our health. So, but we need to make prevention visible and point out the ways that this is already happening, and to show that what we're talking about now is simply an extension of what we want for ourselves and what we, you know, what we don't even think about because it works for us. And how we talk about prevention really matters too. I mean, particularly right now, people don't have a very good impression of government. So the way we can address that is to point out, as I mentioned, the way that government protects us from physical or financial harm, the way that they solve problems. You know, right now, all of the coverage around Hurricane Sandy is about pointing out how government really kind of kicked into gear and was really prepared. And, you know, there's been a series of great quotes. I know I'm over time. I'm going to go really, one more minute. There was a series of great quotes from New Jersey Governor Christie where he said, you know, he's been praising the Obama administration and FEMA because he's like, I am getting what I need right now. And this is not about, yes, there's an election next week, but right now, this is not about partisan politics. It's about making sure that the federal government is providing what the people in the state of New Jersey need. And it's, when I've been reading these quotes, you know, what came to mind is that it's unfortunate that it's only in times of like true natural, you know, catastrophes and disasters that we can totally put aside, you know, partisan politics. But if you look at the coverage right now, it's very different on the role of government in people's lives than it was last week. Okay, really quickly, localizing community prevention. This also addresses the big government overreach. Talk about how community prevention is addressing the needs in the communities where you're living and working. It's working right here. It's about local priorities and needs. It's about local groups, you know, banding together. And here's a great, though long and wordy, example of this in roll call. This is by two mayors, Chip Johnson of Hernando, Mississippi, and Joe Reardon of Wyandotte County, Kansas, a Republican and a Democrat. And they write, as in most cities and towns across our nation, our residents fight tooth and nail to make ends meet. But we've both found that investing in health and prevention not only helps our friends and neighbors' quality of life, it also gives our limited budgets the most bang for their buck. And they point out that, you know, they may be on opposite side of the aisle, but they both care about prevention. And in fact, if you look locally, prevention isn't nearly as partisan as it is on the national and federal level. So there are really great opportunities to strengthen local support for prevention. And so this is the central message. I know now I'm very much over time, but I'm done. If you take away nothing else from this presentation, you take away the fact that we all deserve a health system that supports health in the first place. You know, there's nothing partisan about that statement. And there is my contact information. And I look forward to, let's see, we still have 17 minutes for discussion. We're good. Yeah.